This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies. Proven solutions for wildlife control. Delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Hello, this is Clint Locklear. Welcome to Trapping Across America. We're at the PCG compound, somewhere just right around Trapperitaville, which you'll find in Dunlap, Tennessee. It's June, and we're going to be talking about some different subjects today, as we normally do. It's all going to be based around trapping, depending on where I get with the first question that I'm going to have on about some QDMA and living out of an RV for trapping and stuff like that. Depending how long that takes, I'm either going to get into talking a little bit of Japanese, we're going to learn some Japanese today, or we're going to talk about summer beaver control, which has been two or three questions I've got later, and you're probably going to be highly shocked on my answer to that. So that's where this show's going. So sit back, you know, put your seatbelt on. This is definitely going to be a no safe zone for people that get a little upset if things aren't said exactly their way. And the way I want to start off the no safe zone when it comes to this trapping thing is I am very excited about having another trapping show on Trapping Radio that's not me. And Meat Trapper, which is not a fur trapper, believe it or not, he's exactly what he is. He is a meat trapper from Birmingham, Alabama. I've known him for years now. We did a show, which you can go back and listen to in the archives, where he basically traps for food. And he does it for a lot of different reasons. Now, I need to warn you, his show is not a feel-good, blow-in-your-ear, put-your-hand-up-your-skirt type of thing when it comes to trapping either. And if you're very soft-skinned and you're looking for a cheerleader for trapping and, you know, someone to put on the pom-poms and all that type stuff to try to give you a warm, fuzzy feeling, Meat Trapper is not the guy that's probably going to be your man. And I've already heard his first episode. They're going to be coming out on Mondays. Curious of how many he's going to be able to do in a year. There's a lot of work in this. He's a very busy guy. But I think he's going to probably put in quite a few shows. So not only can you listen to Trapping Radio, which you're normally to on Friday, you have one be coming on Monday. He's also a student of mine in the business course. So I've offered them guys, and possibly down the road, not to put any pressure on anybody, I won't mention your name, put that much pressure, but there's a guy talking about maybe doing an ADC podcast that would really put a quality one on, and if he decides to go this route, I'm going to give him space on Trapping Radio. So, I mean, if this kind of works out, it'd be kind of cool. It'd be kind of like two or three different times a week you can listen to trapping, get your fix a little bit, and make your week smooth out just a fuzz. When you're talking about, so I'm pretty excited about that. I'm not sure what he's going to call his show, Meat Trapper. Could this be the Meat Trapper? I don't know, but whatever it is, I promise you, you'll find it interesting, and it will totally make you question some stuff about trapping. Like I said, he's not a cheerleader. I'm just giving you warning, heads up. If you don't like him, he gives you his email. You can go bitch at him. You can bitch at me all you want to. I'll just delete your email. Because, you know, that's part of the thing about having the First Amendment. People can say what they want. And I know his heart's in the right place. I know he actually does trap all the time. He does feed his family with the meat that he traps from, which is kind of cool in our society today. So Meat Trapper will be on Mondays. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, I just had to, a guy was going to send his order in. Some reason didn't go through. Now, guys, this is when I'm talking about the value of the video program I've got coming up. I want you to understand how big a value that is. He was going to order, and we've had this for a couple of years. We have like a predator package and a water package. And what that means is you'll get, you know, I think it's four or five different videos. And I take a big cut off that price, but it's still about $200. And then he was wanting to get a couple of snaring videos. That's going to put his bill up to like $290. For not even half of the videos. So he said, you know, he's asking if his order went through. It did not. I responded to him and told him, look, man, why don't you just wait a couple of weeks? You can get all my videos for cheaper than you're getting to order some of them. And he didn't respond back, so I'm curious to see what he's going to do. But, you know, when you're getting the, what's going to happen on this is you're going to get a username and password. You're allowed to use two different IPOs. And what I mean by that, the computer's going to be set up. You can watch it at home, or you can watch it at work, you can watch it at home, watch it on your cell phone. And that's going to be pretty much the limiting factor on this. But you can go through, and if, as long as you got internet, you can watch any of my DVDs as many times as you want over whatever subject that is. Now, that's really cool because the price is so low for the amount of information you get. You're about going to get a PhD in everything that I know about trapping when it comes to those DVDs. And it's going to be at such a low, I mean, it is such a low price. I'm hoping that the volume of the sales makes up for it. And more than that, it's a way that I can give back, I believe, to trappers because they've been very, very receptive to my lure business. And that's where I'm putting more and more of my time.
So, you know, this is something I can go thank you with. And it is. It's you know, it's like saving $700, $800, something like that if you buy all of them. So just keep that in mind. That'll be coming out in a couple weeks. I do want to say that I've finally got it straightened out. I'm going to be at the New York State Show this year. Didn't get to go last year. And basically, not that I didn't want to go, but where I live in Tennessee and where that show's at and where the National was at up towards Buffalo, that would have meant I'd have been driving 4,000 miles in about 3 weeks. And as much as I like to see guys in New York, I don't like you that much. So, I mean, driving to me has become one of those things I don't like to do. So 4,000 miles in a couple weeks was just way too much. But I've got it worked out with New York, so I'm going to be up there. There's going to be a lot of really big name guys up there. That's a fun show if you're in New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, anything like that. You really need to go take a look at that show because it's smaller. It's a happier show than some of the state shows. It's just different. I really don't know how to put my finger on it, but it's one of those that I plan on making a regular thing from year to year from now on. So just let me know. I'll be at the New York State Show. Well, I want to get into, this is a different Jesse than last time, but I want to get into a question he had. Now, the first thing is he sent two emails. One of them is wanting to get a hold of my web guy, which I'm assuming that means he wants to do some type of website or something like that. Now, I'm going to give out his email. And you can call him. You can work out your own deals. You can do whatever. I'm not involved in that whatsoever. We have totally separate businesses. We're very good friends. But, and here's the big but, guys. I want you to take this to heart. If you don't like the speed at which he's doing something or you have any issues whatsoever, do not call me. Let me repeat that one more time. If you use David, do not call me, and I'll tell you why. It puts me in a weird position with you, and it puts me in a weird position with him. And I'm not his boss. I don't have control over David. He does very good at what he does. You can see from the websites that he helps me with. But I'm not involved in David's business. So if you're going to use David or you work out a deal with David, that's between totally you and him. Now, to reach him, the easiest way is his email, which is Roland, R-O-L-I-N. I tell you what, let me check that real quick. Just so there's no confusion here. I misspelled his name wrong for years. So, yeah. It's Roland at Chattanooga Internet. .com. That's R-O-L-E-N at Chattanooga, which is C-H-A-T-T-A-N-O-O-G-A internet.com. That's the way you can reach him. I'm not going to give his phone number out for the simple reason I know David well enough that if he don't know who your number is and it's out of state, he's going to assume you're a telemarketer and he won't pick up anyway. So if you put it in the email and you say you're a trapper because he has helped other trappers do websites and he definitely knows mine, that'll probably get his attention. Guys, he's a very busy guy. His skills are in high demand. And because of that, it's harder to get. So he's in the situation where sometimes he's really hard to get a hold of because of other projects he's got going on and he's focusing on a client. That's the reason I'm saying, if you try to get a hold of him and you can't, don't call me. If you do work out a deal with him and it's not going the way you want it to, or you want this something changed on your website and he's really busy with another client, don't call me because it puts me in a weird position with you and him, and I'm not going to put up with it because that's just putting me in a position that I don't feel comfortable of being in. But if you want to get a hold of him, that's how you do it. Roland, R-O-L-E-N, at ChattanoogaInternet.com. Okay. So I'm going to go back to that email and, oh boy, hope I didn't lose it. Okay, here we go. There's a lot of questions in here and I don't know how long it's going to take me to cover this. So this reason I'm saying it depends on what I'm going to cover next on what it is that, the end of the show is going to be about. So we're going to get started. Jesse He says in here he's from Michigan, so that's where he's calling from. He says, Clint, first, thank you for all the free info you give out on the web. You're an inspiration to me and many others. Assuming you're not giving instruction, which I just don't have time to right now, guys. So that assumption is correct. I would like to know of any Eastern Woofer that works year-round and gives instructions year-round. Craig O'Gorman, John Graham are options a little far. I'm looking for the best. What are your suggestions to someone who wants to do full-time predator control year-round, or at least majority of the year? I'm from Southeast Michigan, fair number of coyotes, looking to move. Is there any trans-area states you see as a good need for predator control in the future, especially QDMA related? If you don't know what that is, it's Quality Deer Management Association. On one of your shows, you talked about the thought of living out of an RV and doing damage control at least part of the year. Is that a viable idea / reality? Thanks for any help you can give, Jess. Well, I'm going to start with these. And Craig O'Gorman is a great person to go take instruction from. I've not taken from John Graham. I've heard good things about him. He's definitely done it for many years, so I'm sure that there's no issues there whatsoever. Now, see, I'm a trapper, Jess. And Jesse, here's the deal. A trapper can see a trap when someone sets one for him. That's what makes him a good trapper. It's kind of like someone that's taught to see a counterfeit bill. They don't teach them what a counterfeit bill looks like. They teach them what a real bill looks like. That's how they know what a counterfeit is. Now, what you're asking me is a trap. Now, I don't think you meant it that way. But we've got an audience of 25,000-30,000 trappers that listen to this, and you're asking me for individual names on who does this year round. That's not a trap that I'm going to walk into. For the simple fact, I do have some people in mind that would probably be pretty good. Most of them don't trap predators year round. The ones that do more or less trap for a very specific either person or company or railroad or something like that, and most of those don't give instruction that I know of. And there would be a lot of people that I may not know or I may forget to say, and you can imagine if someone is in that league of trapping and they hear that I didn't mention them, they're going to get their feelings hurt, and I'm going to have to try to explain why I didn't mention them. That is the trap that you set for me, and I'm not going to walk into it. Now, I'm not sure that you're looking at this in the right way. Eastern Woofer. Now, that definitely wouldn't be Craig or John if you're looking at it that way. A woofer's a woofer, and there's not many what I would consider really woofers in the eastern part of the country. There's just not. There's some that are on short burst, like Randy Smith, just from his numbers and the speed at which he gets them. He doesn't call himself a woofer, but when he's out cow trapping, I don't know how else to think about it. I mean, I really don't. Now, does he go full time? No, he does not. Does he do control work? No, he does not. So that doesn't meet your criteria there, you know. And I'm using him, for example, for one, he's a friend, and I've used him before, so that wouldn't kind of get people excited. But are you sure that you want to only get someone that does this full time? And here's the reason that I'm going to say this. There is a psychological thing that happens with every single human being. And the psychological thing happens to me, everybody else. There's no way to get around it. So when you're thinking about someone that only does predator control, you're going to get a mindset from that person that is very stuck only in the world that they live in at that time. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But predator control group guys have a tendency to look at everything through predator control group. And I have a tendency to do this. Which what you're looking to do, you may think that's very well and good. But I want to propose something to you that maybe that's not the best thing. When I decided that I was going to be a full-time trapper, and I made this decision, I looked at my education as the same way as college, except mine was a lot cheaper, and I actually learned something. So it was a little bit different. What I didn't get was a very expensive piece of paper, which I could care less about. and my clients could care less about either. The education part is what I was looking at. So I did go to Craig twice, you know, took instruction from Red O'Hearn with Coons. I took coyote instruction all the way to mink instruction with Johnny Thorpe. You know, the fox, some of the coyote stuff with Ron and Pete Leggett. And there's some others that I went to, but, you know, I was looking at that strictly from an educational point of view. If you just look at people that are in predator control, and that's your criteria, you're going to miss out on a big part of your education, man. I'm just letting you know. Because predator control can put you in many different things. Like, when I was given that type of instruction, I would explain the process of when I went into a job. You know, if it was a two-week job or it was a two-week times three type campaign, how I would set it up one, two, and three, which would I'd work on the pups and go all the way to the end where it was just the few that I was dealing with. And that part is good. And then you have guys that have been trapping a long, long time. And when someone's been doing something a long, long time, they close their mind off to other stuff that's going on around them. And you'll notice when this happens most of the time, these guys are doing what they did 10, 15 years ago. Which means they're probably not really expanding what they're learning or what they're doing. So my advice is, look for people that catch a lot of coyotes. If that's what you want to go for, your criteria will be better met by maybe some guys that do it full time, and maybe some guys, you know, like Randy, that can go out to Indiana or somewhere and catch 200 coyotes in 2 weeks, or 170 or whatever it was. And then you come back and you combine those two into your own type of system that you're going to be using on your coyotes. But just strictly thinking about this from a control side, you're going to be missing a lot of techniques and a lot of thought process and a lot of real life experience. Because there's a lot of guys that could easily be full-time predator control guys and they choose not to. Like Randy has a very successful pest control and ADC business in Pennsylvania. He would probably lose a lot of money if he was full-time predator control. There's a lot of travel. He's got two rambunctious boys that he's got to keep control of. All that type stuff comes into play. So he's probably made the choice not to do that. Plus, with Randy, going to one set piece of property and trying to hammer on one small group of coyotes would drive him insane. It doesn't match his personality. So that's another thing to keep in mind. But if you don't think you can learn from somebody that can catch 179 coyotes in 2 weeks in the Midwest during bad weather, well, you're probably not looking at things right. Now you've got Zagger that's in the East and all that. And I'm not going to mention a bunch of names here. But there is a lot of different guys that do this, because when you're thinking about predator control, you've got to put everything into perspective. Predator control from a city ADC is very different from what you're looking maybe to do with QDMA. But what they do could be very important to you if you take that education. So what I'm saying, if you want to be good at coyotes, find people that catch a lot of coyotes, and that's who you go with. Not a lot of people that promote themselves as catching a lot of coyotes. See, that's a big difference. You know, if they can't talk about individual clients with you and they can't show you at least, you know, five or six, you know, end of year pictures, if they're one of the coyote guys that absolutely blow your socks off and impress you, there's probably more hype there than there is reality. Because you can market yourself as anything you want. That doesn't mean that's what you are. So keep that in mind when you're thinking about this type of stuff. Go with people that actually put fur on the ground and in piles, in lots of it. And they do it quick and they do it efficiently. That's the type of thing that you really want to be paying attention to when you're picking somebody to listen to about their coyotes. Don't fall for the marketing. Don't, you know, fall for what, because they write articles, that means they're a good trapper. That does not. That just means they write articles. They could be a good trapper and write articles. But for what it sounds like you're wanting to do, you need number men. Because with numbers comes real life experience. And that real life experience can be explained in a lot of different ways to you about what you want to do. So, you know, as far as guys that do it, you know, I would seriously look at you know, like listening to some of the podcasts that Chip's helped me with some of the guys that's done the live market the way they've done it, them boys got a lot of experience. And it'd be very helpful to you to pick up on that experience. Do they give instruction? I really don't know. You know, but it's one of those things that just to keep in mind. Now, what are your suggestions, someone who wants to do predator control year-round or at least the majority of the year? Well, my suggestion is, one, you need to learn business. Trapping and predator control is full-time, which means for money. That means for profit. The trapping of a predator control is actually probably only about 30%. The rest of it is learning how to get customers, and because they want you to trap coyotes, that's no different than someone that needs their grass cut as far as an advertisement campaign goes. You need to know who your customers are, and you need to be very specific about that. And you're kind of on the right path because you're looking at the QDMA. That's not the only thing, but that's definitely a starting place. So in business, you know, you need to understand what your value is. You have to understand what your expenses are. You have to understand what your burn rates are as far as what you need on a daily or a monthly basis to pay your bills and to keep going, and then what profits you need to have on top of that. And then you've got to be able to go out and, you know, blow in their ears and you know, give them massages if you need to. Not that I've ever had to, but I mean, you know, when you're at some of these conventions, I mean, you're almost courting some of these people, you know, to get them. All of that is way more important than your ability to trap, because predator control is a business. Now, a trapper is a technician. A technician does a skill. The skill doesn't have anything to do with the ability to make money. And technicians really struggle with this concept. I'm not sure why, but they do. So my advice is, you need to get very serious on learning about business. And luckily for you, in the day and age, you've got all kind of free information that you can get with podcasts. On different running different businesses, you can get all kind of ebooks with a Kindle. It's really cheap now to get a lot of information. And when I suggest books on Kindle, the first one would be E-Myth Mystery. I think there's 2, 3, or 4 of those. Find out how many there is. Don't read the last one. He turned into some type of I don't even know how to explain it. I mean, he turned into like Bernie Sanders saving the world type thing. I mean, it was really weird. But the first couple of books, every single person that wants to be in predator control could read that, because it separates the technician out of the business and why the business has to be ran more than the technician needs to know what his skill is. So that is my suggestions. And if you need to learn about customers, then there's all kind of books. You know, with a smartphone today or with a computer, you can get on Stitcher, iHeart, iTunes, whatever. Just type in advertising, you know, customer advertising, marketing. Come up with all kind of podcasts. About half of them, your eyes will glaze over and you'll fall asleep in the first 5 minutes. Just delete those and go to the next. You'll find some that'll really help you out. That's my suggestion, is don't worry so much about the trapping part. You probably got that down already, enough to do a good enough job. The business part is where most people are going to fall down, and it's a shame, because the technician and the business part is, like I said, it's something really hard for trappers to grasp. But this is a business no different than running a landscaping business. It is no different than running. Some type of farm or any type of service business, you know, it is what it is. So that's my biggest thing that I would recommend that you learn to do, is the business part of it. And you may already know that, you know, but that's always my advice that I give somebody, because it's not do you know how to trap, it's do you know how to make money. And sadly, with the day with our educational system, And our parents growing up in the same educational system, people have forgot the skill of making money. And that's what a business is. So, you know, you've got to really get in depth on that. So keep all that stuff in mind. looking to move, is there any trends, area, or states you see a great need for predator control? Well, the biggest one, straight off the bat, hands down, no question, whatever, if I was going to move somewhere and I wanted to trap full-time, it'd be Texas. No question in my mind. I would look at a map and I would go 2 or 3 hours outside of Dallas, and I would draw a line over to 3 or 4 hours past San Antonio, and then I would go down to the border from San Antonio, and I would go down to the border from a couple of maybe 100 miles outside of Dallas, and I'd go down where you're looking all the way through Corpus Christi, all the way up to the hill countries. That's big country, guys. If there was 50 companies running full time, you'd never even know it. I mean, that's a big country, because the need for that down there is really, really high. And a lot of those guys are willing to pay for some type of system, you know, to come in and really get the predators under control. So that would be my first thing. If I was going to move and I want to do that full time, that's exactly where I would go. Me personally, just keep this in mind, I live in the South. South Texas is freaking miserable hot from about May till January. I'm talking miserable hot. You know, you wake up in the morning and it's already 98 degrees. So keep that in mind. But if you're looking for the place to go and you can handle that, that's absolutely the place to go. The next places I would look at would be southern states, not because I'm from the South, but because of the way that landowners treat their business and the way the QDMA especially is set up more in the South than other places. You have very wealthy people that love their deer. They have anywhere from 500 to 2 or 3,000 acres. Some of them do paid hunts, most of them don't. It's a hobby for them, and they've got plenty of money. So when they see their fawns numbers going down, it's very personal to them. They've got the income and they can pay you. And that seems to be more like that pretty much in the South. In South, I mean from Kentucky down all the way through Florida, probably all the way through Louisiana. You know, but even for me, finding one place to do this, maybe besides Texas, with a QDMA never worked out. I'm just being honest with you. I had to do a ton of traveling. I may be in Kentucky for a couple of weeks, and I'd come home for 2 or 3 days, and I'd go to Missouri. Then I'd go back to North Carolina, and then I'd go to South Carolina. Then I'd be in Georgia. Then I'd be in Tennessee. Then I'd be in South Carolina. Then I'd be over in Louisiana or Mississippi. And the traveling of all that will absolutely wear you out. So, you know, keep that in mind. There is parts of states that seem to have more coalition of these type of places. And in the southern side, you have old school money that still have, you know, working quail plantations and stuff like that. And they do a lot of deer hunting on there. They're very active inside the QDMA. And that's what I would recommend. Now, when you get more up north, it doesn't seem to be the same. There are jobs to pick up, no doubt. But it is nowhere near the same of the response that you're going to get. So, you know, you really need to keep that in mind. You know, Michigan is not going to be a very good place to pull this off for a full-time living, because you may find one or two guys and that's it, you know, that are willing to pay enough to where it's like a profession. It's just very different. The Midwest, Missouri, that seems to do okay. Parts of Kansas is okay. Iowa and Illinois and those big agriculture, big field type things, they don't look at the deer the same way that they do in the South as far as protection. They grow all the corn that they can, and whatever deer are there. Now, not everybody now, but I mean most of the time. So getting, you know, like you get down into southern Ohio or Indiana or Illinois over to Iowa and into Nebraska, it's a lot harder to get guys to pay you like a professional needs to get paid to go out and do work. So I'm just being honest with you. Out west, when you go farther out west, you're in positions that you got to get a little more creative as far as working with counties with their predator taxes, which means they that most of the people there will be in a program and they'll pay a couple of dollars per sheep or per cow. There's a pool of money there. They have a trapper go out and do that. Most of those are, you know, are pretty much taken till the dude dies. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind. And as far as the guides, they're leasing land, lots of land. If they lose half of the deer, they don't like it. But is it really worth your time to pay somebody to do it? It's easier just to go lease better herds of animals, probably. The West is a little harder for that. And plus, when you get out West, you've got mostly government-owned land. And because of that, someone's not going to pay you to trap government land. So you got to keep that in mind. So, you know, basically what all this boils down to is I would say somewhere in the South or Texas. That's where I would go. There's a lot of guys going down to Texas now, and there's a reason for that. So keep that in mind. The QDMA is a very good source. If you're very serious about this and you want to know what it is, go to some of the state associations. Now, Michigan's a long way from southern states in the QDMA. Well, that's just a business cost. You'll have to get over it. If they're, you know, they have a national QDMA you can go to, talk to people, kind of get a read on what it is, you know, how many of those people are there that are interested, what are their states from, different things like that. You'd be better off going to the individual state meetings than you would the national to get a better grasp. And when you go in there, don't act like a used car salesman. Just let people know kind of what you're there for, and you're a trapper, and you're interested in deer. And let things happen the way they happen. If you go in there and try to super sell people, you'll turn them off and you'll never get any traction that way. So please listen to me on that one. I've seen too many guys try to do it. But you're better off to go to the state. So that may be you pick two or three, you drive or you fly, whatever you have to do. Before you move, that's not very expensive, because there's nothing more aggravating than moving somewhere than figuring out you're in the wrong state and have to move again. So the cost of that really will, you know, help you out on that a lot. Now, the last thing about this one, about living out of an RV and doing damage control. Absolutely, that's very viable. You know, I've started a permaculture farm here. My yard is pretty close to a botanical garden, and I enjoy that. And I don't want to be gone for months at a time like I used to be. I mean, for 20 years near about, I was hardly ever home. As I get older, I enjoy being at home. That type of work is more of a younger man's game. You're physically better for it. You're mentally better for it. You don't have as many roots yet. If you've got a wife and kids, it's going to be very tough. I'm just letting you know that right off the bat. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about that. So, you know, keep that in mind too. But staying out of an RV, like in Texas, if you had an RV that had like the toy thing on the back where you could have a four-wheeler and keep your gear in there, and you could put skin fur and stuff in the back and have a little area for you to sleep and stuff, that would get you availability to a lot more ranches than having to sleep in their place. So you could just roll up, you know, you could be pulling a truck with your RV, you back the truck up, get your four-wheeler out, get all your stuff set up and go to work. Now, if that job lasts a month, 45 days, when that's done, you've got another one set up, you load all that crap back up in there, and you go to your next job. It's very, very doable to do that. The reason I was looking at doing it is because it was almost like me and my wife weren't married anymore. And I was looking at it in a way that we could actually spend time together. She would go with me most of the time. So that's the reason I was looking at that more than anything else. But doing it out of an RV is actually pretty good, because if you go to somewhere like Texas when the oil's high and you got to stay in a motel room, you're not going to find a motel in South Texas for less than $160, $180 a night, because if you don't take it, the next guy coming through the door has got an oil company's credit card and they're going to pay it because they don't have to pay it. The company's paying it. So supply and demand's really got that out of whack. You know, and as far as the RV goes, it's a way that you can drive one vehicle, have a truck, have a four-wheeler, or use a Jeep, which is probably a better thing to use down in Texas than a truck, especially if you're pulling an RV, because you can get around a lot easier. It's just like a big four-wheeler. You know, that will save you a lot of time. You can have some semblance at home when you're there, you know, you can cook. You get into some of these places, you stay, and, you know, you're fighting rats all night, and, you know, you got bug bites on you when you wake up in the morning. And when you're on RV, you don't have to deal with that as much, so it helps keep you some of your sanity and stuff like that. So that's not a big deal. Is it viable? Absolutely. It's less viable when you're doing it the way that I was having to do it because of scheduling, where I may be going from Missouri to North Carolina to Mississippi to South Carolina. Fuel gets up to, you know, $3 a gallon with an RV that's only getting 6-8 gallons a mile. That's going to really sink into your profit, you know. But if you can schedule stuff where you're more of on a route, that may not be so bad, you know, because you're not going as far in between payouts of what you're doing. So, I mean, all that's keep in mind. And no matter what you think right now, I'm just being totally honest with you. Building up a full-time predator control business is going to take a few years, if not several. And that's just the fact, because you're going to have a lot of people that will tell you they'll pay you and they won't, or once you get dealing with them, you don't want to deal with them. And what you're trying to do with a full-time business is get just enough customers that you trap, so you make a good living, and you start cutting out customers that aren't the best customers, or their land's not the best, or it's aggravating to work with, or whatever like that, and you get going. See, I'm no longer looking for any customers. Customers I've got, I don't want anymore. I've been with them for years. If I lose one, it won't be hard to pick one up to compensate it, you know, because people are asking me all the time to come trap for them. But that's where you're trying to get. And you may be thinking, well, I've got to have all these customers. Well, let's just think about something a minute, guys. If you're going to do full-time predator control work, that's not like fur trapping. That's not like fur trapping on the weekend. For you to do a decent job, you're talking a minimum of 2 weeks on a job. To do a really good job, you're going to need a minimum of 6 weeks spread out over three different times. So 2 weeks is 14 days. You get 10 customers. That's 140 days with 10 customers with only 2 weeks at a time. And you got to think inside that you got to have travel time in between. You're going to have holidays and birthdays with your wife or your family. You're going to want to go on vacation. You're going to want to just veg out after a while because you're going to get burnt. So it's not like you need 1,000 customers to do this. You just need 10 or 12 really good customers and you'll be good to go. So that's the goal of doing this, to build a business like that, is to find 10 or 12 really good customers and you stick with it. Now you get 5 customers times, let's see, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, and 2 weeks is 14 times 3 is 42 times 5. That's 210 days. You have 5 customers. You do these 3 maintenance campaigns on every year. That's 210 days out of the year. So, you know, this is where you've got to find customers that have the income to pay you what you need to make, because you can only go see so many of them. Now, if you're going to try to just do it like a fur trapper and you get a little money along the way, it's going to be a lot tougher on you that way, because the income's probably not going to be there. So, you know, that's my thoughts on this stuff. You know, is the RV a reality? Yes. Is it a reality to get a predator control group? Yeah. But you need to understand the business way more than you understand the trapping side of things. And when you're looking at different things with your education, don't limit yourself to just listening to people that do control or something, because you're going to miss a lot. I learned a lot from Johnny Thorpe that didn't have anything to do with control, that actually helped me a lot in control. And if I wouldn't have went to him because he doesn't do control, I'd have missed out on that. So, you know, keep all that stuff in mind when you're looking at this. Your education needs to be broad, it needs to be deep, and it needs to be based on reality and not based on marketing. So just keep that in mind when you're doing it. Okay, I'm going to attempt to get through this real quick. It won't be as long for this is the notes that I've got. So what we're going to do is we're going to learn a few Japanese words today. And we're going to put this in context to trapping. And The reason I want you to see this in the way that we're going to talk about it is that efficiency is very different from scalability. And it's very different from putting a lot of money into doing something. And what I'm talking about is the lean system. Now, I didn't come up with this by any stretch of the imagination. The owner of Toyota came up with this. And it's a very interesting concept. Now, you guys that are in the business course, what we're going over right now is kind of like the very tip of the iceberg, just very gentle brush strokes of this. The lean system is something we're going to get into great detail about your own business. We're going to use a lot of examples, so it's very, very clear to you. So if you're listening to this, just keep in mind we're going to get way in depth on this, because this is the difference of making a lot of money and not making a lot of money most of the time. And it's hard for someone to see coming from the outside. Now, the lean system, it comes from Japan and it comes from Toyota. Now, when they started doing this, what was the reason for it? Well, they just come out of a world war. All their factories were screwed up. They didn't have a lot of the suppliers. They couldn't compete on the scalability of GM and Ford and stuff like that. So they started going about business in a different way. Now, I'm not talking about your business today. I'm talking about trapping. But I want to give you the background of what this is. Now, I'll tell you how powerful this is. Toyota, when they started using this system within 3 years, GM and Ford made more gross income. And what I mean by gross, if you sell 10 widgets for $10, you know, it's $100. Well, if you've got $9 in each widget, you only made, you know, $10, because there's only $1 profit. Gross is what the overall money you brought in, which is pretty irrelevant to a business. And then you've got the net, which is the profit, which is what it costs you to make. Now, Toyota could not compete with GM and Ford and Chrysler and these other companies because they were on a big scale, big infrastructure, high volume type of thing. They didn't have the factory space. They didn't have the suppliers. They didn't have the trained people. So they went out in a different way. And this system called the lean system is what they come up with. And did it make a difference? Toyota, once they started doing this after a couple of years, they were 3.8 times more profitable than GM or Ford or Chrysler and Dodge. Let me say that one more time. A smaller business was more profitable than GM, more profitable than Ford, and more profitable than Chrysler and Dodge by 3 times 8. Now, that's not 3 times 8% more. That's 3.8% times 3.8%. So if GM profited 100, Toyota's profiting 380, I guess you'd say. So it's not like a small 3.8. When you do it times that, that's a huge number. That's like someone making $100,000 and someone makes 100% more, they're making $200,000. Well, you know, if the actual profit to GM was, you know, 10 million, the profit to Toyota was 30 million. You know, so you got to keep that in. But they did it in such a way that was very ingenious. And we're going to talk about some of these techniques when it comes to your trapping. So, first off, they didn't need a lot of capital, which is good for you, the trapper, because that means you don't have to spend as much money. And they're not trying to compete on scale. So what I'm trying to say with that, with your trapping, so you go to one of my website, guys, and you look at some of those pictures. You know, when we're down in Texas and we're taking 170 bobcats in 60 days, that's pretty much big scale type trapping. You know, you had me and Norm and Albert and going down there and catching all this stuff. That's big scale. It costs a lot of money to do it. We had 3 trucks going. We had all the traps, all the snares. We had to feed ourselves. We had to do all that. That's like big business style trapping is what that was. Scale. Plus all the, you know, hundreds of coyotes and stuff like that we were catching. That's big scale. Just like GM is big business. Now, from a trapper's point of view, you can go big scale or you can go efficient. and you can use something like the Lean system, which you can buy books on this. You can actually get degrees from this now from college. Most countries are using this, and America still is not, because they don't have the union issues that we have when it comes to big business that we have in this country. So these other countries are getting leaner and more profitable, while our companies are getting bloated with less money, but everybody wants to make more money inside of it, and everybody wants to buy cheap products. So you have some conflicts going on there. So they were leaner. Now, one of the interesting things that if you went to work for Toyota, and you still do actually, but when you originally started going, Toyota was, you know, 10 years into all this. When you went, they made it very clear you did not go to work at Toyota. You went to Toyota to think. Now see, that's very different than going to work for GM or Ford. You're going to commit a task that's a repeatable task, and they don't want you to think. They don't want you to ask questions. They don't want you to do anything except do what they tell you to do. And if you do start speaking up about anything, you're a troublemaker and they'll get rid of you. Complete opposite at Toyota. If you went to Toyota and you mindlessly did the things that you were supposed to do, they fired you, which I think is awesome. Because if you're gonna be getting money from a company, you need to be thinking while you're there. So it's kind of like the old adage, you know. Instead of I've said that to a couple of guys here lately. What was that? Oh boy, I should have wrote that one down. I'll think about it here in a minute. But you need to be engaged when you're at work. You know, you can be there mentally and just kind of going through the motion, but you need to be engaged. And that was one of the inefficiencies that Toyota saw with other countries. So, on your own trapping, guys, you need to be mentally engaged in what you're doing. And a lot of these words we're getting ready to learn that are Japanese, you'll see why you need to think. Because to get more efficient, you have to think. It's not as simple and it's not as short term as someone wants to think. So if you're gonna get more efficient, you have to be smarter and think more than most people are willing to do. So that's what I'm asking you to do if you're gonna try to follow this. What you're looking for in a lean system is efficient flow of a lot of different things. Not just so much doing something, but an efficient flow in doing something. And on the lean system, you're always making that leaner. And a lot of times it's making it much better on the worker. And in our case, when I say worker during the rest of this show, I'm talking about you, the trapper. You're the worker. So you're making it more efficient on yourself. You have to ask some questions, and this is where you're going to have to figure this out. Who is really in charge? Now, in trapping, there can be really, I guess there can be a lot of different things that you can say to this. But who's in charge? Are you? Or is the trapper in charge? Is the customer in charge? Is your ego in charge? Are your friends in charge? Is Facebook in charge? Whatever. You've got to be able to know who this is for this system to work for you. In Toyota, the lean system puts the customer in charge. Because we're going to build on this here in a second, guys, and you'll see why this is actually pretty freaking ingenious. Your customer is in charge. Why is that? Because your customer is the only person that puts value on what you do. You don't put value on what you do, your customer does. So you can go out and say, it's worth it if I go trap beaver for $10,000 a piece. Well, the market's going to laugh at you. You're going to have to figure out what the market actually thinks the value of you trapping a beaver is worth. That's why you have to know who's in charge. Most people in business or trappers don't realize that there's a customer base involved, and that's who's actually in charge, because they put the value on the end product. So you got to keep that in mind. It's not you, the trapper. It's not your ego. It's not your friends. It's not social media. It's not anything else. It's the end customer. Now, who's the end customer to trappers? It can be a fur buyer. It can be an auction house. It can be a meat market. It can be someone that you're selling meat to for lure. It can be glands. It can be retail. if you're doing Finnish fur, you know, something like that, you know, so you have to know who you're selling to and who your end customer is. And this has become real important here in a minute. Now, here's a couple of Japanese words that I'm going to use once to so you know what they are, and I'll try to use American from this point on. But when I think about this, I've kind of learned this in the way from the Japanese point of view. You have fascia, which is a Japanese word, and what that means is value added. Now, value added to who? Value added to the customer. Now, in a lean system, the customer is in who's in charge. Remember that. So you have value added, which is what you're trying to do. And then it's not just if you value add like McDonald's, would you like supersized with that? That's not what they're talking about. Value add is when you do something to add value to that customer through your product or your service or whatever you can do. And in trapping, it could be fur, it could be tan fur, it could be glands to a lure guy, it could be collecting urine for other trappers. It can be all kind of different things, whoever your customer is. Are you adding value to that? That's fascia. That's super important. Now, the other word we're going to talk a lot about is muda. Now, muda is waste. And waste is probably not what you're thinking of right now. So we have two different things here, and these are the two main bases of the lean system. You have fascia, which is added value for the customer, and you have muda, which is waste. And the whole goal of this is to lean out the timeline to get to the cash at the end of the system. So if you're trapping for money and you're going to be selling it, you need to figure out a way so it's quicker to the time you catch the fur to you sell the fur, and you want to shorten that up. If you're selling glands, you want to be able to shorten that up. If you're selling meats, you want to shorten that up. You know, there can be some times where you store fur and different things like that, but the goal of this system is that's what it is. So I'm just explaining that point out. Now, the main part of efficiency, which is very different from the American way of thinking, and I'm not going to put on the American foam finger and start singing Star Spangled Banner or nothing. Americans have a very particular view. Most Americans still do. I think they're going to be changing that view because we don't live in that world anymore. But they base it on growth. They base it on scalability and everything like that. And, you know, we're going to, you know, like I've used farming and trapping the same way before. Farming, you've got to get bigger. You got to have more bushels per acre. You can need bigger tractors. You need to do all this. That's the big scale that they're talking about. Now, a lean system looks at everything the complete opposite. They want to shrink their business. See, that goes against every American principle right there. But I think that'll change. But you want to shrink your business to make more profit. And you as a trapper have that ability to do that. And that's what we're going to be getting into with this. And you want to maximize an asset, or you want to get rid of it. Do you actually need it? You don't want to be too heavy in tech or assets that extend the timeline. And for business, it means one other thing. But for trapping, dude, that's so applicable to us as trappers. And I've seen videos and stuff on YouTube, and I've seen pictures and different things like that. You're leaning out is what you're doing. You're shrinking your business. Now, your business as a trapper is catching fur, but it's more than that. It's what you're doing when you're out on the trap line, because the act of trapping the fur is going to separate the two. Are you doing fascia, which is value to the customer? Are you doing muda, which is waste? And to shrink a business, that means if you don't need it, you don't keep it. So, you know, when I see people go out and they've got, you know, setting bags, and they've got all this crap in there, and then they've got, you know, remake bags, and they've got just as much crap in there, and then they've got, you know, four sets of everything they might ever need, break, lose, want, seen in a trapping magazine or a YouTube video or a trapping DVD. They've got that stacked all in their truck in all different kinds of ways and all that type stuff. See, that's not sure. That's growing a business and growing the assets in there, and it's not going to be efficient. The efficiency part of this, from a trapper's point of view, is to figure out how to lean out your system. So if you do you really need to have a set bag and a remake back? Well, everybody's got their own opinion. I'll let you come up with your own. To me, I think it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But what you've done is you duplicated something that you have. So now when you're going out trapping, not only are you packing more, you're buying more, you're using more, but is that giving any value added to the customer? Absolutely not. Everything in this system is geared towards, if it's not added value to the customer, it's waste in one form or another. And having too much crap when you go out trapping, guys, is waste. It really is. You know, if you got four different kinds of Yoho trowels, you wasted money, you're wasting time because you got to pick which one you need. You got to go find the right one, which you ever think you think it is when you're out on the trap line, and it's causing you waste and inefficiency. So the more crap you've got, the more inefficient you're going to be when you're out trapping. Now, to someone that sells trapping stuff, that may seem counterintuitive. I'm just being honest with you. So you need to streamline what you use. You don't want to get too crazy on high tech or gizmos or stuff like that. Basic tools that do basic things that are efficient. That's what you're looking to do inside of your trapping. Now, waste, I'm going to start using English terms for this. Waste is what most of a business is. If you go and you go look in my lure shed, there's a bunch of waste in my lure shed. Not my lure shed, my trapping shed. There's traps I haven't used in years. There's traps that I bought because they were on sale and never used them. There's traps that I may use once every 5 years. There's, different type of conibear boxes and buckets and wire cages. And I mean, all that was waste. All that was really waste because when I go out and do my normal stuff now, I don't use it. So I didn't need it. So it was waste. And I'm taking up space. It's in the way and everything. It makes everything inefficient. So when I go out to, to go to a job and I'm crawling over all this crap that I don't use, it's inefficient. It's waste. And what you're trying to do is lean all this out to have a better process, or a leaner process is what you're trying to do. You want to centralize your tools. Now, the lean system is based more on factory type work or other type businesses. But for trapping, that part still holds true. If you're going out to go trapping and you got stuff in your bedroom and under your house and in a garage and in a fur shed and over at your dad's barn and all that, see, that's very inefficient because you're going to be spending a lot of time, which is waste. You know, Muda, it will eat up a business no matter what it is, and trapping is definitely business. So centralize your tools. You know, centralize them to where when I go out trapping, I know where my bag is in the back of the Jeep. I know where my auger goes in the back of the Jeep. I know what's on the tailgate because that's where the fur goes and the stinky stuff goes and stuff like that. So it's not in there and I don't have fleas crawling all over me. You know, behind my front seats are just piles of traps. You know, that's what I'm using. They got drags already hooked to them. You know, but when I go up to somewhere to do, my trowel is in the bag. My sifter is in the bag. You know, all that I'm going to use on 99% of my sets is all in one thing. I grab the bag and I go, that's centralization. Now, when it comes to when you get away from the trap line, you've also got to think about this in term of your business as the fur shed. If you're putting up fur and you got to walk outside of your building, go across the yard to get a couple of stretchers and you do that, then you walk that up to a different place and you put that where you're going to let it dry. Think about all that wasted time. You want to centralize whatever it is that the process is that you're working on. So when you're going out to set traps, think of that in the form of a process. When you're putting up fur, it's a form of a process. When you're going to sell fur, it's a form of a process. You know, everything is a process. That's the way, if you're going to have a very leaned out business, you got to start thinking in these systems or these processes, and you want to do that. And like I said, you get rid of things you don't use. One of the things that I find very fascinating that they do on people that use this in agriculture is they build a red tag room. And a red tag room is getting stuff more efficient because trappers are just like farmers. They're like auto mechanics. They're like everything else. you have so much crap that you don't use, it's hard to find anything when you need to find it. And all that time wasted is not being productive. So what they do is they set up a room, and I've started doing this now in my first shed. Stuff that I haven't used in 5 or 6 years, I'm gonna start getting rid of it at some trapping shows. Why? Because I don't need it, obviously, because I haven't used it in 5 or 6 years. You know, but I wouldn't even go that far. If I haven't used a trapping thing in a year or two at the most, I would start getting rid of it, because you're going to free up that capital and buy stuff you do need. You know, so you're not being stingy on things you do need, because you got a lot of stuff that you have that you don't need. But this red tag room is pretty simple. It doesn't have to necessarily be a room. It can be a corner. It can be a closet. It can be the crawl space under your house. It can be whatever you want. You put stuff in there that you're not sure that you really need. Then, if you don't need it after a certain amount of time, and for most factories, they do a 6-month thing. When they don't need it, they have people go in there and they take it to auction. Because even if you're storing stuff around, it doesn't help you as far as efficiency with that. But that red tag system will really get you to thinking if you need something or not. You know, just keep that in mind. It's a little hard to get rid of stuff sometimes. Trust me, I get it. You know, I'm with the guns and the ammo and all that type of stuff, I get it. But if you're going to look at this from an efficiency point of view, which is what we're talking about today, you have to get that, which means you don't need to be addicted to tools. You know, Tool Man Taylor and all that, when I was growing up, you know, every time he'd see a tool, he'd start, you know, almost like barking like a walrus. You know, you don't need to be addicted to tools. Tools are only to do a task. And the fewer tools you have, the more efficient you're going to be. When I see somebody on a trapping video or something like that, and they've got every type of piece of gear in a trapping catalog in the back of their truck, I know they're not very efficient at all. I know they're not putting out very many traps. I know they're not catching very many animals, because there's no way you can be efficient with all that crap around you. You just can't be it. So the other thing that they really big on in the lean system, which is different in the way that they talk about it inside the factory, is have your tools where you need them. So, you know, when you're thinking about going out and trapping, you know, you have a bag or a box or however you're going to set this up, and it's where you can get it at all times. And we're going to go into some motion type studies here in a minute, and you'll see how important that is. In your fur shed, you want to have everything that you're, if you're going to be working on beaver, you don't need to move your feet at all when you're putting up beaver hardly. If you are and you're walking around and you're going over this wall to get that, and you're going to dump this over there, and your knife's over there and your sharpener's over here, dude, you're not being very efficient. You're trying to do something in a way that's so inefficient. No wonder people get so frustrated when it comes to what they make on trapping, the time amount of time they put into it. Not because the process needs to take that much time, but they're so inefficient that the process does take that time. A lot of times that comes with fur. And when we talk about some of these studies in a minute, that will make more sense to you, I promise. So, you know, keep that in mind. See, some of these I've got for the business course we don't need to go over, because they don't really apply to this. Okay, the other thing that they really beat on is standardized through simplicity. You know, one shovel that'll do pretty much everything. One hammer that'll do pretty much everything. You know, one kind of disposable stake. One kind or two kinds of traps. Or one kind of trap for coyotes and another trap for fox or whatever. But you standardize, you know, so, and part of that efficiency, if you're using 10 different type traps, I don't care who you are, if you go to take a bridger and you used a bed in a bridger, then you grab an MB550, the bed's not going to be right. It's hardly going to bed in there. The hole's going to be too big. It's going to be too deep. It's going to be wobbly, this, that, and the other. Inefficiency. That's exactly what that is, guys, is inefficiency. But if you only use, say, bridgers, or only use MB550s, or only use Dukes, or whatever it is that you're using, trust me, your muscle memory becomes very efficient. That's why when people watch me give demos or take instruction, I put traps in really, really fast, because it's efficient. And because it's efficient, it's because I've standardized a lot of different things that I do. I put the holes in the same way. You know, I look at everything in processing when it comes to this type of stuff, but you're looking to do it through simplicity. The more complex you make anything, the more problems you're going to have in it. And that's a general rule no matter what it is that you're looking at. So there's no way to get around that. Simplicity always beats something that's complex. Okay, the next one is going to be psychological flow. Now, for a trapper, this is huge. Big. As Trump says, this is huge. So, psychological flow. This is very different from production flow. Psychological flow is are you a happy little camper between your ears because of what you're doing is easy to do? Now, most trappers don't look at what they do this way. They work way too hard. If you find yourself just beat up after 4 or 5 hours of trapping, I promise you, your psychological flow is screwed up and your production flow is screwed up. Trapping shouldn't be that hard of work. Trappers make it that hard because they're inefficient. Now, happy worker, and there's a lot of tests been done on this to have a happy worker, and keep that in mind, guys. That's you. You're the happy worker. A happy worker, they have what they need and no more. When you give too much to a worker, it complicates things. It slows things down. He's got to think too much. You know, he's trying to make, is this the right tool? I mean, he'll go over and get that. You know, in trapping, you know, I'm trying to put in 55,000 different sets a day. You know, that's not a very good flow whatsoever. You need what you need and no more. I mean, what do you really need besides put in a trap, besides something to dig a hole, if you're doing a dirt hole, to dig a bed, to use as a pan cover and underall, something to sift with, bait and lure. Now see, what I just said right there is what, 4 tools? That's it. What else do you need besides that? I mean, you can say, okay, I want to use grab and die sticks. Okay, now you don't need the shovel. So you didn't add anything, now you're at the same level. You know, what do you really need when you go trapping? And the more crap you're digging around in your bag to get to what you want, the more frustrated you'll be at the end of the day. I've seen trappers get so frustrated because they couldn't find whatever it is they were looking for, they start slinging crap out of the truck out into the field. Now they got to go pick all their crap up before they can leave. Not very efficient. And most of all, they're psychologically frustrated. So the psychological frustration needs to be thought of when you're doing this. Now, when you're thinking about your customers, adding value to that customer, keep in mind, anything you don't do for the end customer is waste. Now see, this is going to be, you may not think it's anything to a trapper, but it really does. So you're out trapping and you got to go to lunch. Well, you need to go to lunch, but that's waste on the business part. Why? Because the customer's not going to pay you to go to lunch. You know, if you're doing predator control and you're going to shoot a video or do a bunch of Facebook stuff and you spend an hour a day doing that type thing, you know, posting pictures all over the place of what you're doing, that's not adding value to the customer. So that's waste. You know, it not necessarily it's a bad thing what you're doing, or, you know, you got to eat lunch, but you need to understand what that is. Your goal is to have every action you do towards the customer in a value add somehow. You know, and what you have to do when you think of that is there's 3 questions. What do they want specifically? How do they want it specifically? And when do they want it specifically? Now with fur, what do they want? If they don't want any coon, is it the smartest thing to go catch 1,000 coon? How do they want it? If they do want coon, do they want it green? Do they want it put up? Do they want it on wood? Do they want it on wire? So if they want it on wood and you put it on wire, that's waste because the energy you took putting that up is not going to add value to that customer, and they're going to be upset because you put it on wire instead of wood. Now you can go, well, I'm trapper, I'll do whatever I want to. You're missing the point. You're not in control. The customer's in control. When do they want it? You know, you've got to think. It is, is there a better time to sell cats? Listen to a fur buyer. You know, cats are better after February. Okay. You know, to me, when I hear that, that means I don't dare take a cat in there before February, because in his mind, a better time to sell cats is after February. So I'm always asking these questions when it comes to that. Now, the customer, keep in mind, he's the only one that sets values. You do not. So it's always about the customer. Anything that's not about the customer is basically waste. And one of the ways that trappers fall into this is they get into they have a fascination with a tech of some kind, you know, a certain type of trap they try to force into every situation, a certain type of hole they try to force in the situation. They try to use something experimental when it's not working, but they're fascinated with the concept. I'm guilty of that as anybody. They get production fascinated, where that maybe they worry about trying to get all their traps in a minute and a half, but they're such sloppy and bad that, you know, their catch goes way down. They get caught up with one part of the production, not the whole system of the production, and it gets all screwed up. So that's not the way to go about it. Okay, I'm going down these notes, guys. Now, what exactly does value add mean? Now, this is what it is. Okay, when you catch a live animal, unless it's for the live market, there's not a lot of value for that, say, a bobcat. When you catch it and you skin it, it has more value that way than it does if you just go throw a live bobcat and it's running around the shop of a fur buyer. See what I'm saying? Now, if you flesh it and put it up, it has more value then. So you're not wasting time. If it has more value to the end customer and he wants it put up, you're not wasting time if you put it up. Now, certain times of the years, like when otter gets really high and you're catching a bunch of otter, and a put up otter is 112 and a green otter is 90, it's not really a value add, because the end customer's telling you that the put up that you're doing is not that valuable to them. So, you know, keep all that type of stuff in mind. You know, if your value add, a piece of raw steel doesn't have a lot of value. You make a trap out of it, you've doubled the value. You know, that's what I'm trying to think. Washing fur is not a waste of time, because it adds value to the end user. It looks better, it feels better. You'll get a better price for it, because the customer values a clean fur over a bloody fur. See, that's not a waste of time to wash a fur, you know. That's what I'm talking about. To take glands out, if you're selling glands to somebody, do they want them frozen? Do they want them with salt? Do they want them with glycerin? Do they want them with sodium benzenoid? How is it that they want them? They want beaver castor dried or green, you know? And because like a lot of waste that a lot of guys do in trapping is they get their castor, they take all that time to dry them and check them and do this and put them in a bag and try to keep them from molding. And they're selling it to a lure maker that then is not going to give them the dried price, because that's not what they wanted. So all that time of drying the fur is actually a waste. It's a waste from what the trapper's doing. Because now the lure maker is not going to pay you the dried fur like a perfume maker, because we're not making perfume, we're making lure. And it's not as much per ounce as perfume is. So one, we can't. And two, a dried caster is not that valuable to a lure maker except in a few specific situations. So now he's going to have to take his time, and he's going to have to reconstitute that caster, and then he's going to have to start at the, he's going to have to get it back in the green form before he can use it anyway. You know, so he's wasting his time, and you're wasting your time, and you're not getting the money for it. That's waste, you know, to keep in mind. Waste can be another thing on your carcasses. Wasting a carcass when you can sell the meat is crazy. Because there's a value add to that. People a lot of times want the meat, whether it be for people, be for pets, be for hunt dogs, whatever it is. Someone is growing a garden. If you bury that stuff for them and you can get some money because you're fertilizing their garden for them, that kicks that up another notch. See, that's not waste. But if you don't do that, that is definitely waste. So you can have waste because you don't do something, and you have waste because you do something. So be thinking about this all the time. Is what I'm doing adding value to the end customer and whatever that customer is that you're using. Okay, now we're gonna not go through all of this, but I do want to hit on the different types of waste so you can see some of this in your own trapping. Overproduction. Nobody wants coon, you go out and catch 1,000 because it looks cool on Facebook. Overproduction is a waste. Because if you don't have a market for it, really what are you catching it for? Unless you're gambling on the thing. But you don't even know who your customer is at that point. Now you have sitting waste. Now see, when I store fur from 1 year to the next or for 4 years or whatever it is, I have sitting waste. Because the timeline from when I do an action till I get paid for it is extended over a longer period of time. So that is actually a waste. Now, at the end, I'm hopefully rewarded, but I'm gambling. So, you know, keep that in mind, sitting waste. If you're, and another thing trappers do with this all the time, you catch otter and it's warm, and you put it out in the sun and it singes before you get home, you got waste. Because you just cut the value of that to the customer. Now, if you mist it down, you put it in a bag and you keep it out of the sun, all of a sudden now you don't have waste. So it's not a waste to go through that extra effort. If you're catching beaver and it starts warming up and you put them on their stomach and they're bouncing around in the truck and they get all green bellied, bobcats do this very quick, you know, because of your actions, you're causing waste. So when you see green-bellied fur, the first thing a smart trapper is going to do is take a step back and go, holy cow, I'm wasting. How can I correct this? So like when I'm down in Louisiana and I'm trapping otter and bobcats and stuff and it starts getting warm, I've got coolers in the back of my truck with frozen ice jugs. If it's warm, the animals go in the cooler if I can't skin them right then. The option that we use in Texas and a lot of places that I go, if it's questionable, I will stop and skin as I go. It's not a waste for me to stop and skin. It is a waste for me to let the fur get all green belly and start slipping. It's a waste if I'm tired because I'm so inefficient throughout the day that I go in and throw a bunch of fur on the floor and then I got to go run traps the next day and then I'm tired and a couple days later I finally, you know, go out to the fur shed and start skinning and a bunch of it's got green bellies and the fur slip. That's waste. That's sitting waste is what you're looking at. And that can also be considered workers' waste, which is one of the things of the lean system. Transportation waste to a trapper. Oh, good grief. This is a big one. You're going out to run a line. And you don't sit there and take enough thought into what you're doing or how you're running the line. You know, saving a minute or two here or 5 minutes there or figuring out a route where you can sneak in on another part of the line and not have to have a bunch of back driving and stuff like that, that is huge to your production. Transportation waste, no matter what the business is, a lot of times that is so big of why businesses lose money. And trapping is a business. So when you're thinking about your transportation, what are the routes that you're running? You need to put a lot of thought process into that. Overprocessing, you know, this is a big one that trappers do. The same thing, it happens in factories and farms and everything else, but overprocessing. See, when it comes to fur, you have fur that's not put up very well, fur that's okay put up, fur that's good put up, then you have excellent fur. And you guys that are in the fur side of things, and you spend that extra 30 or 40 minutes on a piece of fur, or an extra 10 minutes on a piece of fur and you got 50 of them and you just wasted an hour, when there's a certain point where you can overprocess and that overprocessing becomes a waste. I've seen guys that do beaver to the point you can't tell where the front legs are. You literally feel like you could eat spaghetti off of them and you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, not being clean. You know, they brushed it so much, you know, they washed it so much. They've got the perfect size board. They trimmed everything up to the point of where it's a piece of artwork. That's overprocessing. That's a waste. Because you don't want bad put up fur, and you don't want just okay put up fur. You want good put up fur. anything past that good put up fur is a waste. You're not going to get more money for that. Now, the fur buyer may, you know, pat your head and slap you on the bottom because you're the best guy putting up fur he knows and this, that, and the other. But when you actually run the numbers, you're not going to get paid for that because he's not going to get paid for that because the market is not set up on fur for like extraordinary artwork put up fur. So, you know, keep that in mind. If you overprocess your fur, it is a waste. If you spend too much time piddling at a set, it's a waste. It really is. It's a waste. Now, inventory can be a waste as far as just having too much crap, which we've kind of talked about. Motion waste, which we're going to spend a little more time on. And then uneven and productive sale, which is a waste, which we could probably put that towards trapping, but I'm probably not going to. And then the last one, I believe, is just brain waste. That's where guys don't think, and it causes a lot of waste. And it, a lot, most of the time, it's within motion. So that's what we're going to spend the last part of the show on, is motion. Now, we're going to put this in some things that you can have some fun with. And you will see, if you will actually do this, guys, you will probably find out how inefficient you actually are. Now, in a factory, the way that this thing got started, what they did is they would have a worker in a factory that they would sit there, and they paid another guy to watch him. Not build nothing, but to watch him. And what this guy did that was working is he just did what he normally did. Now, the guy that was watching him drew a map of wherever his workstation was throughout the factory. And every time he went somewhere, the guy drew a line. So if he had to go from his table over to a machine, it drew a line. Now, if he had to go to the bathroom, it drew a line. If he had to go ask permission to do this from a boss, he drew a line. If he had to go get a tool, it drew a line. So at the end of the day, you've got a map of what you're doing, and you got all these squiggly marks all over it. And the point of this thing was for them in a factory, if the bathroom took too long to go to, build the bathroom closer to the guy that's doing the work because of the efficiency. If he had to walk around the table to get to a machine, they moved the table so he could take a straight line. Now, does he need to go to the machine 20 times a day? What if we can get it where only goes 10 times a day? Now he's 10 times more efficient. What if the tools were underneath his table and he didn't have to walk 20 feet to go get a tool? See, that's what efficiency is. Now we're trapping. Now see, this is pretty fun if you do it. There's two ways you can, probably more than two ways, but there's a couple of ways you can do this. Have some fun with it. Grab a young kid, your girlfriend, your wife. If you got a wife, don't take your girlfriend. But find somebody, another trapper, doesn't matter who it is, to go with you for a couple of days while you're trapping. And you want to have someone hang out in your fur shop and do this for you while you're in your fur shop. And what you're going to do is you're going to have a map when you're out trapping. You're going to have your vehicle, and you're going to have a pretend point where your trap's going to be, because it's going to be different. Sometimes it's on the left, sometimes it's on the right. Now, every time you get out of that vehicle and you walk around the back of the truck, he's going to draw a line. When you walk over to the trap set, he's going to draw a line. When you walk over to the woods to get a stick, he's going to draw a line. When you walk over to cut some grass, he's going to cut a line. When you walk over to find a turd, he's going to drop a line. When you walk around to find tracks, he's going to follow you with that pencil till you get a line. If you got to come back to the truck because you forgot your stake driver or whatever, he's going to mark a line. Now, at the end of the day, you're going to have a piece of spaghetti just like someone in the factory had. And what you're going to see is how inefficient you are as a trapper. Now, when you come in from the fur shed, he's going to sit in the fur shed, get on a little chair and have his little pad paper in front of him. He's going to draw out your fur shed and your door. And if you're dealing with a couple of buildings, he's going to draw those buildings. And as you're going to walk around, you're going to start skinning. And then you got to get a knife. He's going to draw. Well, you go get the knife. Then you got to go get a sharpening stone. Then you got to go over here to get your hoops or your board and your nails over there and your hammers over there. And you got to go out and get the boards at the other building. And he's going to be following you with that pencil. And it's going to look like spaghetti. That's going to show you how inefficient you are. Now, your goal, if you're going to use the lean system and actually have an efficient business, is you want to figure out how to cut the spaghetti down. So if you notice when you're out trapping that you come back to the truck at every set because you need your stake driver, hello, take your stake driver with you to begin with. You just cut out a bunch of efficiency. If you spend a lot of time going to find a coyote turd while you're out trapping, hello, collect a bunch of coyote turds when you're not trapping so they're in the truck. Efficiency. If you've got to go get sticks for your lure off in the woods and you set 50 sets and 30 of them you took, 40 extra feet to go get a stick, hello, take some popsicle sticks with you. That's the reason I carry popsicle sticks. And eventually, you're going to whittle that down. See, the goal of this in the lean system is not to have radical changes within a business right at the beginning. That's not the point of this. What it is, it's to find ways to cut out all the efficiencies, all the waste, so all of the effort is towards the end user. See, going to get a stick, you're not getting paid for that when you catch an animal. When you go find a cow turd, you're not getting paid for that. There's no value to the customer for that. When you walk back to the truck, there's no value for that when you get your disposable steak to the end customer. So every motion you do, not towards the end customer, of getting that set in to catch the animal as efficiently possible is waste. And then when you come back to your lure shed, if you see all these spaghetti marks and you go, what in the world was I going over there 15 times? Well, then you figure out, oh, that's where my, if you're doing a hoop beaver, that's where my clips are at. Well, hey, you big dummy, move that over on your table where you can just rotate your body and grab them somehow. Put them on a post or a beam or have them hanging from the ceiling. Doing something. Now you cut down all of that. Your knife sharpener is not on another table. It's hooked onto the table that you're at. Your boards are sitting under your table, next to your table or whatever, so you only got to take a step or two to get it. And the way that the factories do a lot of this stuff, like with boards, if you're doing a bunch of beaver or a bunch of stretchers, and you know that you're probably catching 15, 20 beaver a day, when you get done at the end of the day and you've got your beaver stretched and finished, and you look down and you go, okay, I'm catching about 15 beaver a day and I've got 3 stretchers left, you go at that moment all at one time and you bring over the beaver stretchers and the bobcat stretchers and you set them under there. So the next day when you come into work, you're not having to go do that. And you're not doing it periodically. But if you look at all that spaghetti drawing on your own trapping and you start taking the spaghetti away, you start becoming more efficient. And that's the goal. And it, like with your trapping, if you will be amazed if you do a drawing of what you do on a daily basis when you go out trapping. Like with Randy, I can tell you part of the reason he catches so much stuff is he's so efficient. When he walks away from that truck, he does not come back to it. Everything he needs is in that bag. For one, he uses simple sets with simple tools, and he can construct his sets with what's in that bag. He does not walk back to the truck. He does not walk to the wood line. He does not walk over for a turd. He does not walk 50 feet away to take a leak. He doesn't do anything that's inefficient. When he's skinning coyotes, and he can skin a coyote off the tailgate of a truck in like 3 minutes, he doesn't even waste the time to set the knife on the tailgate. He's got a meat-up animal there that he uses like a pincushion. So if he's pulling down to get the fur around the neck, he sticks it in the shoulder blade. So then when he gets it down to his ears, he just pulls up out of his shoulder blade and cuts both of the earbuds. No waste whatsoever. When he walks to the back of the truck, he's got a little bitty bag with his knife and his sharpener, and there's very few tools he uses for skinning. Right next to that is a thing of gloves. He puts on his gloves. He pulls his little bag right over to him. He's got a clip that he hooks up to a snare that's off the back of the tailgate. And this is before he went to put them on the front of the truck with a like a gamble type thing. He would skin the animal. He would cut the glands out. He would put the gland in his hand, unfold the glove over the gland. So he's not even wasting time to get a bag out. He's using the glove that he's got to take off anyway as the bag to put the glands in. Efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. That's why Randy, part of the reason, Randy catches way more fur than most people during the same time period. Efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. And what we talked about today, if you want to really get into this system, dude, you can buy all kind of books for it. No problem whatsoever. Now, if you're just going to look at this as something that's kind of neat, maybe, take what we said today and really think about it. And before the season starts, go look around your fur shop and think about what goes on in your trap line. And just have a journal to start with. You know, okay, getting traps ready is a process. How do I do that more efficiently? Because bowling your trap, believe it or not, is a waste. I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying it's a waste. How you load your truck. How is it loaded as far as the set goes? All these are separate processes. How do you put in the set? Separate process. How do you dispatch the animal? That's a separate process. How do you remake the set? Separate process. How do you put the fur, or how do you deal with the fur out on the line? Separate process. How are you running your routes? Separate process. When you get home, how do you put up the fur? Totally separate process. You know, if you're just skinning and freezing, that's a process, and then it's a separate process when you take them out to flesh and stretch them. Separate process. All those are places to get more efficient. And what happens when you do this, guys, when you look at this in a professional manner instead of just purely as a hobby, for one, you'll enjoy the hobby more because all the studies have shown the same thing. A worker's happier if he only has what he needs and no more. So psychologically, you're going to be better. You know, you start looking at your truck and your fur shed and things in different ways. If you're doing a task that's really hard, how do you make it easier? Maybe you lower the table 2 inches. You know, maybe you put a truck cart in there or something like that so you can move something around at the end of the day, like with your stretchers or something. So you cut the energy, more efficiency. You know, that's some stuff we didn't go into. But this efficiency, and if you start doing that, you'll be happier trapping, you'll be faster trapping, you'll catch more because you're more efficient. And that's probably the goal, whether you're a professional trapper, a predator control trapper, or a hobby trapper. And there'll be less stress throughout the day when you start doing this. Because you don't have the temper tantrums and get mad because you can't find the whatever the gizmo is for this set that you need, and it's under, you know, 400 pounds of other stuff that you don't need, you know, in the back of the truck or something like that. I'm not the most organized guy when it comes to trapping, but I can still put sets out pretty fast because I'm unorganized in an organized way. You know, the back of my Jeep may have a pile of traps, but at the very back of it, where they start falling off towards the tailgate thing, that's where the bag goes, and on the left-hand side, that's where the auger goes. Pretty simple. You know, in the front seat of my Jeep when I'm trapping, that's where I keep the lure and the bait. So if I know I'm running low on something, I don't even have to get out of the vehicle. I can reach over if I'm by myself and not having a student or a school, and I can pull out the bait that I need to replace for it, even take my butt out of the seat. Efficiency. That's what you're looking for. That's what you're looking at when you're doing these type of things. But the ease in which trapping becomes after that point, all that hard work and misery and all that stuff that goes along with most of it, it's trapper made. It's not what it needs to be done as far as adding value to the customer, whatever you're, however you're selling your fur at the end. You know, thinking about that, you know, break everything you down. Is this really necessary? Or is this something I do? If I'm doing it, is it waste, or is it for the added value to the customer? Totally changes your brain concept on what you're doing. So, you know, efficiency is the key, guys. you know, having fun is definitely a key, and the more efficient you are, the more fun you're going to have. So this is a lesson in Japanese way of doing business on Trapping Radio, which you probably thought you'd never heard, and 10 years ago, I would have probably never thought I'd have been covering. So there you go, and go and start working on that efficiency, and you'll be glad that you did.